Well, hey there. I am so glad that you are here, glad that you are joining me. I want you to pull up a chair and get comfortable. This is the place where, you know, we chat. We chat about stuff that matters in your life. We want to inform you, inspire you, and in this case, we want to introduce you to a couple people that I think you really will want to know. They have an incredible story, one that is inspiring. It's got lots of threads of redemption and forgiveness and the grace of God all through it. It's really going to be impactful to you, so I want you to stay tuned. You are not going to want to miss this time together. A great show today. We're talking about a topic that I think is going to be very, very important for married couples in particular, but I think if you're in any sort of relationship that is important to you, that you want to make the best of, I think you're going to be able to glean lessons from our conversation with two very incredible people, Justin and Tricia Davis. This is their book, Beyond Ordinary, and we're going to talk a little bit about what inspired them to write it, the challenges that they have been through, and how they've come out of it victoriously. Will you please help me to welcome Justin and Tricia?
Thank you for coming. I'm so glad that you're here.
Thank you so much for having us.
So glad that you're here. Have a seat. All right, you've got a story to tell, and I just kind of want to jump right into it.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you specific questions because there are questions I want to ask, but I also just want you to tell us the story. I mean, what is the story of your marriage? You've been married 19 years.
19 years.
But it's been quite a journey, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Go. Go.
Oh, I wish it started off better than it really did, but when we met, I had an infatuation with Tricia that she didn't really reciprocate with me.
I heard that you asked her out twice a week, every week, until she would say yes.
It's pretty intense.
That sounds kind of stalkerish, had you say it right now, but that's really true. There was a guy on our basketball team in college that really liked Tricia and wanted me to set him up with her. And once I introduced myself to her, I was like, man, I need to go out with that girl. But she had a boyfriend back home and just really wasn't interested in me. And I loved me a lot, and I wanted her to love me too, and so I just kept asking her out over and over again.
We were already so very opposite. I grew up Southside Chicago, very inner city setting.
Yeah.
Justin grew up he makes me call it a city, but it's a city with a bunch of cornfields around it. So we were just very different in all kinds of ways.
Okay.
So we met at a Christian college in Lincoln, Illinois.
Yep.
And I wasn't really college bound, so it was like a miracle that I was even at college. The fact that I looked like J-Lo when most of the people on the campus didn't look like J-Lo kind of made me stand out. But he asked me out, and then he had a bet. And he placed a bet that he could get me to go out with him before the end of the semester.
Oh.
And I was like, oh,
that's not
no.
what you really want to find out, that somebody placed a bet on you.
No.
Well, where do Christians learn to gossip? It's not in church. It's at Christian college, right?
Okay.
And so, you know, within 10 minutes, she heard about this bet.
Yeah.
And
you lost.
I did lose. So after I paid $50, you know, to my buddy, we started going out the next semester.
Now, okay, I'm just curious. We need to move on, but I'm just curious. Did you, since you knew about the bet, you decided to say no, I won't date you, I won't date you, I won't date you.
Yeah. And the cool thing, you're right?
I feel like there's some girl power going on here that I just probably need to remove myself from.
The neat thing in it, though, was it stripped away that pressure of that dating experience.
Yeah.
So we just became really good friends because that's all that I would allow. And I fell for him a lot quicker than I let on.
Yeah. Okay.
So I was hoping for that 51st ask,
yes.
you know, and was thankful that he did.
So you dated and you got married, and then tell us about those formative years of your marriage and kind of how it all transpired and what led you to the message of this story.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, we met at Christian college and we had this just core belief that if you love God and you love each other, that everything is going to be okay. Everything's going to go up and to the right, you know? And so we were studying for ministry. So I graduated from college. We jumped right into student ministry. And we just had this desire to change the world through the local church. You know, we just believed that God had called us to share the hope of Christ through the local church. And that was just our passion. And so we felt like we were gifted in that area. We felt like Tricia was leading worship. I was speaking. Like, you know, we're leading students to Christ. It was just a great, you know, introduction to our marriage. 4 months into marriage, we found out that Trish didn't have the flu, that she was pregnant with our first son. And so
you had three boys, right?
Yes. Three boys.
Three boys now. Okay. Yeah.
So 18, 15, and 11. So our oldest is getting ready to go to college. So we're needing some family therapy on
that.
So
you have these small children then, and you're going through your first years of marriage, and you're working in church.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then...
Yeah, so in 2002, we just felt like, you know, God had laid on our hearts this vision to plant a church. And so we were actually living in Nashville at the time and sold everything that we owned. And we moved to the north side of Indianapolis to start a church for people who didn't go to church. Hmm. And our vision was we had $5,000 to our name. And we just thought, okay, by the time we run out of this money, we should have a church going. Which sounds very faithful. This is a stupid way to start a church. I would never recommend that. But that was kind of our vision and our dream. And so the first week, we moved on June 1st, and on June 9th, 12 people showed up. And as a church planner, you're like, oh my gosh, 12 people.
There are people.
Yeah. 12 disciples. Like, this is biblical. Like, Jesus is in this. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is going to work out. You're looking for any sign at all that it could actually work. And God just started really, you know, allowing the vision and the passion that we had shared, you know, for the first 7 years of our ministry and our marriage to really come into fruition through the church plant.
That's cool. That's cool. And so then you have this best friend of yours.
Mm-hmm. We met in Kokomo, Indiana.
Okay.
And it was probably like 3 years into ministry. And, you know, we talk about different seasons of life. Mm-hmm. And as women, that season when you meet people who are having babies for the first time,
yes.
It's those
kind of
friendships.
Doing life together.
Yeah, they're like sealed for life,
okay.
You know, when you make fun of each other and how you look pregnant and then encourage each other how you look pregnant. And
that's right.
It was that type of relationship. And, you know, Justin and I both grew up in families that were, although highly dysfunctional in their own right, we felt very loved. Mm-hmm. And so we had this belief that if we just loved each other and we loved God, that all the rest of life was just going to go up and to the right. Because not only did we follow Jesus, but we were serving him in ministry.
Right.
And we didn't come from ministry backgrounds. Our parents weren't in ministry. So it was just all this newness with this core belief that God's going to bless us.
Right.
I don't know where we found that. I don't think it's in the Bible.
But slowly everything kind of began to crumple, right?
Yeah.
In your marriage and in life. Yeah. And so tell us what happened.
Well, you know, a lot of people will ask, you know, what is it about that 7 year to 11 year mark that marriages seem to crumble? And for us, we were living the dream here. We're planning a church. And at the time, planning a church, 80% of church plants failed in general. It didn't matter denominationally.
Okay.
The fact that our church wasn't just surviving, but like it was thriving.
Okay.
We were living the life.
Yeah.
So from the outside looking in, we're this pastor and his wife and their three small boys knocking out ministry. But what we assumed is that if you had everything your heart desired, that your character would follow. And so here we are 3 years into the church plant. We're running around 800. We're getting tons of pats on the back. And I'm the most miserable I've ever been in my marriage, in my ministry, and in my relationship with Christ. But
and why? What was happening in your marriage that was making it difficult?
You know, I think at that point we had become really good ministry partners and just really bad marriage partners. Mm-hmm. You know, we had settled into this pattern where the only thing we really had in common was ministry. Mm-hmm. And so we were really good at it, you know, but we didn't really invest in our marriage relationship. And I think a lot of couples get to that place where they're really good business partners or they're really good parents together, mm-hmm. or they're really good at running a household. They just lose the intentionality that they once had in their marriage relationship. And that was Trish and I. It wasn't like this avalanche. Right. It was just this slow drift that we experienced over the first 10 years of our marriage relationship. Mm-hmm. And I began to drift in my relationship with God, and we definitely began to drift in our marriage relationship during that time.
And it's interesting because your book is called Beyond Ordinary. I love that so much because I think that people, married couples in general, but in our relationships in general, we get kind of settled into ordinary and we feel like it's okay. Like, you know, we're fine. We're doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just sort of make decisions based on the fact that, oh, it's all right that we're kind of in a lull. It doesn't matter. No big deal. But you're saying it is a big deal because over time, that little drip of ordinary kind of whittles away at what makes your relationship what it's supposed to be.
Right? Yeah, I think a lot of us settle for ordinary in our relationship with God. You know, like if you really think about it, what we were promised Christianity was going to be, we're not experiencing. We're not mm-hmm. experiencing life and life to its
abundant
fullest.
Abundant life, right.
Yeah,
exactly.
And so there's this almost disillusionment that sets in, or is it a disillusionment or it's resentment or bitterness? Like, oh, you know, that's for somebody else, but that's not for me. And I think that that can carry over into a lot of our relationships.
Right. So tell us what happened that caused you to have to really rebuild your marriage. You know, there was a situation that happened in your relationship that really caused y'all to have to start at ground zero. And it was difficult. What happened?
Well, I think you get to a place, you know, that you know your heart is growing dark, that you know you're very close to stepping into a path of destruction or turning to a path of health.
Yeah.
And in 2004, when everything was just going fantastic, Justin was in his element. I was so miserable because I felt like the bride of Christ no longer was a partner in our marriage. She felt like a mistress because I was competing with her for Justin's time and attention.
With the church. Yeah.
But I'm the pastor's wife. So who am I going to confess that to?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us get to that place where we know we're getting somewhere that's not healthy, but then we self-talk ourselves down and say, we can't tell anybody because no one's going to understand.
Right.
And I didn't realize at the time, I just thought, I'll just be a little bitter. I'll go in Sunday morning, kiss babies, love people. Cause that, I mean, that's genuinely who I am, but I would just become more and more bitter. And I didn't realize that bitterness, it always lends itself to resentment.
Mm-hmm.
And it started to affect not only our marriage relationship, but how I was parenting. But I just knew Justin loved the church so much that, like, I could be as dark as I want. And what is he going to do? He's never going to leave, which, you know, our choices eventually have consequences. But it just started us on a path where if you're not going to change, then I'm not going to change. And I'm not going to change until you change. And so for the next year, we just really drifted that. You know, you're in a dark place where we were really good at fighting for each other when we got married. And then we got really good at fighting against
each other. Yeah.
But now we were just done fighting. Like, I didn't want to fight for him anymore. And in October, it was, everything blew up to the point where I couldn't hide anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who I was, who Justin had become was so exposed that it caused us to be in that place all over again to either choose a path of health or choose a path of destruction.
So in October of 2005, kind of this pattern kind of manifested and kind of blew up. I came home from a Sunday service and Trisha was laying down for an afternoon nap and I just sat down on the edge of the bed and I said, you know, we need to have a conversation. And she said, about what? And I said, about us. And she just said, what about us? And I said, I'm done. Mm. She kind of sat up in the bed a little bit, still not really understanding what I was kind of getting at. And she said, you're done with what? And I said, I'm done with you. Like, I'm out. Like, I don't want to be married anymore. I don't want to be in ministry anymore. I'm not in love with you. I'm having an affair. It's with your best friend, and I want to be with her. And, you know, even 9 years removed from that, you know, I wish it were a confession of remorse, and I wish it were a confession of repentance, but it was just a confession of resignation.
At the time, it's just, here, it's all out there. I'm sick of living this double life. I'm ready to just move on with the one.
And I think, you know, I had convinced myself that this was as good as my marriage was ever going to be. And if that was as good as it was ever going to be, then I deserve something better.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I think a lot of people feel that way. They get to the place where they're in a certain situation or feeling with their spouse. And if you allow yourself to believe that that's it, that there's nothing more that can ever come from this relationship, then you're right. There are many marriages that would just call it quits because there's got to be something more than what's happening here.
Yeah.
And so how long were you in that affair?
It was a 3-week relationship. I mean, obviously, you know, the friendship spanned a lot, but the relationship itself was 3 weeks. And I think I was really in the darkest place for 2 days, you know, after the confession.
Mm-hmm.
I was just kind of hedging my bets, you know,
and so,
you know, I left the house and went and checked into a hotel and a lady at our church called me and she said, you know, if you have any hope at all of restoring your marriage, you're going to show up at this counseling appointment we've made for you tomorrow. And so I went to this counseling appointment a little defiantly, you know, just kind of like, I'm not really, my heart's not in this. And the lady that I met with, you know, she asked me what my expectations for the counseling appointment were. And I said, you know what, if I'm just really being honest with you, I want you to help me figure out how God's going to bless my life no matter who I choose. Like, that's what I want to know.
Mm-hmm.
And she said something that really became kind of the linchpin of the healing journey that God took us on. And she just said, I can help broken people. I can't help hard-hearted people.
Mm.
We're not just doing a Bible study together. We're on a missionary journey. We're on the road with Paul and Silas and Timothy. We're doing the gospel thing. That's what this is about. And we are entrusted to be the children of the day. Please, by all means, bypass me. Go for God. Ask Him. You pull these words off the page, Lord. You make it fire in my bones. You make me able to say when I get to the end of this journey, what if I had missed that? What if I had missed that? It is time to get back to the stuff of your calling. Today is the day.
I want to know where you were in all of this. You're hearing not only that your husband has had an affair, mm-hmm. but you're hearing that he has had an affair with one of your closest friends. That sounds like something that, you know, you kind of see on TV that happens to other people.
Right.
So you have that now happening to you. It sounds to me like he just kind of sat down and said it. There it was. Did you have any inkling at all before he said that was happening?
Yes and no. I'm a journaler. I've journaled and, you know, I'm not saying it's like a biblical thing. I just, right. journaling has been yeah. a part of my sanity for years. In rereading those journal entries, I knew without knowing.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
you can't fathom that type of brokenness. It was the overwhelming reality of how women experience things that people on the outside say, how can you have not seen that? But when you love somebody so much, you become blinded to a lot of the truth of the situation. But for me, I just wanted Justin oust. I had no idea it would be in this way, but I wanted people to know what, in my view, who he was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if people just knew that he came home late, if people just knew all this list that I had for him. So with the affair, now the truth was out.
So you weren't surprised. You were surprised, but mm-hmm. not totally surprised. There was something in you that said something is going on here.
Right.
And he just kind of brought it to light.
Right.
I want to know what that meant for your relationship with this young lady. Did you call her? Did you just never talk to her again? What did that look like?
Mm. No, we had contact. You know, it was...
Well, you said, you know, you're J-Lo from the block.
I know.
Did you give her a piece of your mind or what happened exactly?
You know, I was on this quest for the next couple of days of truth. I just wanted truth. And so I came to her and just, there was a point in time where I still, even as Justin and I, we were separated for 2 months and we didn't speak for 10 days. And in that 10 days, I had to come to terms, the healing that I thought would come after the truth was revealed wasn't coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to make a choice. Would I continue to be this bitter, resentful woman regardless of my marital status, or was I going to seek healing?
Mm-hmm.
And in those beginning days, I really thought healing was found in truth. And so the one conversation we had, and the only conversation we've had in 9 years, was me kind of demanding truth from her that she was unable to give me. And that
unable or unwilling to give you?
I think both. And I think that that's almost been a 9-year journey for me to really understand true forgiveness, because I knew what unforgiveness was. You know, as we peeled back the layers of our dysfunction and wanted to live a marriage that was grounded in truth, it needed to start with grace. You know, grace begins the currency of truth, to trust each other with all of our baggage. And so mm-hmm. Justin did come to a broken place that he confessed not only the affair, that being abused as a child, sexually abused as a child, having a 10-year pornography addiction. And as hard as all of that was to hear, for the first time, I felt like we were living out God's vision for our marriage, and that's to be fully known by your spouse.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never fully known him.
So let me ask you a question. You just said something that's very interesting to me. You said that you thought that healing started with truth.
Mm-hmm.
Does it not? Or are you saying truth alone is not good enough, that it has to be grace and truth in order for healing to actually come into the picture?
I would say that it's truth with grace with action. Because
That's
you
good.
Can know the truth and not act.
Okay, that's a good formula. Did you get that? That's like a tweetable formula right there. Truth plus grace plus action, plus we're doing something with this truth that we have, and we're applying grace to the situation.
And for forgiveness, the action that I kept on taking was just to become bitter. And then you just get in the cycle. And so, you know, when you struggle with unforgiveness or with forgiving someone, when, especially in your marriage relationship, you can't even remember where the argument started.
Yeah.
But it always comes back to the same thing. Yeah. If you would just,
and it
you
was just, it was just like you left the cap off the toothpaste, but all of a sudden your argument is way over here somewhere.
Right. Yeah. But you always expect it to end differently. Like you're going to find resolve, and then you don't. And then you just carry that baggage.
Yes.
And
you
so
do.
It's just to do something over and over again is the definition of insanity.
Especially women. We don't get hysterical. We get historical. We just bring up every single possible thing.
Now that's tweetable. That is tweetable.
I want to know if you could say to, I guess, men and women in relationships, but what did she do that contributed to your decision? I am not saying she was to blame for your choices.
Yeah.
But what does a wife do that she's not even aware is actually either encouraging or in some way making it easier for him to make that choice to go outside of their marriage? So, again, I want to be clear that I'm not saying that there's any blame on you at all. I'm just wondering, for wives that are watching and think that their husbands would never, I mean, she said that she would have never thought you would have done something. You probably never thought you would. What put you in that vulnerable position? What did you do to yourself?
Yeah.
And what might have she been doing in the relationship that helped to support that vulnerable place?
You know, I think, I don't necessarily think it's gender specific. I think,
I think
all married couples bring baggage and brokenness into a marriage relationship.
Absolutely.
And our belief is if we love each other enough, it'll be okay. And so without allowing, you know, one of the things that we say in the book is that God can only heal parts of our heart we're willing to give to him.
Yeah.
Just like he won't force himself into our salvation, he doesn't force himself into our transformation.
Yeah. The infamous words of Tina Turner, what does love have to do with
it? Exactly. And so it's surrendering, you know, through the process of surrendering more of your heart to God, you're able to see transformation take place in yourself, in your marriage. And so I think a lot of people try to change their spouse. They think, you know what, if I can just change them, then our marriage will be okay. There was a feeling that I was always walking on eggshells.
Which there's a story. I mean, we were married for a year and my parents divorced after 25 years due to infidelity. And so nobody tells you that even baggage that happens into an adult child's life, you can carry that into your own marriage. And I became suspicious if my dad was going to be that person. Then I just knew that was, and so I treated Justin as if he had an affair before the affair even happened.
Very, very interesting. So you're walking on eggshells about something you didn't even do.
Yeah, but also, so that's part of it. And I think I never felt like I was good enough. Never felt like I was, you know, if I mowed the yard, well, I didn't take out the trash. You know what I mean? So there was
always something else. Yes.
That I didn't accomplish.
There wasn't a sense of acceptance and love.
Yeah.
And contentment with you just the way you were.
Right. And so I think that's why it's so important to understand your own story. Mm-hmm. Because what I began to realize is, yes, Trisha brought those things, but they fed my insecurity. They fed my brokenness, the abuse that I had experienced, the sexual sin that I was hiding. You know what I mean? And so it just became this almost like this toxic cocktail that we were mixing that just eventually imploded. Because we expected the other person to be the Messiah for us. We had placed Messiah-like expectations on each other and thought, okay, you know what? They need to be God for me rather than allowing God to be God in each of our own lives.
And what was the straw that broke the camel's back? Because you before the 3 weeks started, you had to have been considering whether or not you were going to let this little live wire that you're starting to see these sparks, you're trying to decide whether or not you're going to cross that line.
Yeah.
What was if you can boil it down to the day that you just said, okay, what was something that caused that kind of sparked that in you?
So about 6 weeks before the affair started, I got a call from one of our board members. He had been with us since day one. And he was about 10 years older than me and he owned his own company, very successful business guy. So he just had a very mentoring relationship with me. Walked us through a lot of stuff getting the church started. And he said, hey, my wife and I aren't really firing on all cylinders. You want to go for a four-wheeler ride? And so I went over to his house. We went out, rode these four-wheelers, and we stopped, and we sat down next to this creek, and we're just throwing rocks in this creek, and he starts pouring his heart out to me in a vulnerable way, unlike anything he'd ever done before. Just not anything earth-shattering, just marriage stuff, you know, just kind of sharing his heart. And I felt the Holy Spirit prompt me in that moment and say, you can share with him. Like, he's a safe person. You could confess the feelings that you're having. You can confess the pornography that you're struggling with. You can confess the way that you and Trisha's marriage is going. At the same time, I felt this other voice say, he's your biggest contributor. And if you share it with him, he's done. And that's the best case scenario. Worst case is you're fired. Mm-hmm. You know, and so in an effort to keep everything under my control, I surrendered it. And that was the last time I can almost visually see myself turning down the volume of the Holy Spirit.
So you did not share with that guy that day.
No.
And you felt the Holy Spirit prompting you to do it, but you chose not to because this guy contributes, you might lose your job, all these other fear factors that came into play.
Absolutely. And I just, from that moment on, there was a, you know, sin is never slow. It's always in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just this avalanche of poor decision after poor decision after a cross line after a conversation that shouldn't have happened. And
your friend she was married too.
Mm-hmm.
She was married and had a family as well.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously the ripple effect of it went both ways.
Yeah, she was on staff at the church. So, I mean, it was a big bomb that dropped, not just in our life, not just in their life, but in the life of this 3-year-old church.
Right. Mm-hmm. And there was a big journey, a big building that had to take place in your lives. Mm-hmm. You had to decide whether or not you were going to stay together or not. You didn't want to be married anymore as it was. Now this bomb of adultery has dropped into the relationship. And so we're going to talk more about that. Listen, this is just part one of our conversation with Justin and Trisha. There is so much more to share. They have this incredible book called Beyond Ordinary. And I think everybody needs to get their hands on this because I just want you to listen to this. The dangers of settling for an ordinary marriage. People think you're doing okay when you have an ordinary, regular, run-of-the-mill marriage. You think you're all right. Well, they're saying there are some things to look at in your relationship. It says their own failure to recognize the warning signs almost resulted in the end of their marriage, their family, and their ministry. And now with disarming transparency, they're going to give you, as a reader, a rare glimpse into the slow fade. Listen to this. The slow fade that eventually led to the near destruction of everything they held dear. And that's what I think is so interesting about this. It's the slow fade.
Yeah.
It's that you don't realize the traumatic effect that the slow, constant little drip is having in the hearts and minds of both of you, but then corporately together. So we're going to talk more about that, how they rebuilt from this place of brokenness in their marriage. It's a great story of redemption because look at them. They're sitting here all close together. They smiling and stuff like that. We got to see how in the world this happened. And so we're going to talk about that more in part two. Would you please help me by thanking them for being with us today? Well, hey there. I am so glad that you are here. Glad that you were joining me. I want you to pull up a chair and get comfortable. This is the place where, you know, we chat. We chat about stuff that matters in your life. We want to inform you, inspire you. And in this case, we want to introduce you to a couple people that I think you really will want to know. They have an incredible story, one that is inspiring. It's got lots of threads of redemption and forgiveness and the grace of God all through it. It's really going to be impactful to you. So I want you to stay tuned. You are not going to want to miss this time together.
Hey.
for joining us. We are kind of having part two of a conversation that's already been going on. We've gotten kind of to the juicy part of this conversation with Justin and Trisha Davis. Will you please welcome them back to our program? Thank you so much for being here. I was just thanking them for being so open and honest and vulnerable, because I think a lot of other people's freedom really does hinge on folks being honest and saying, this is where we were, this is how we got there, and this is how we came out of it. So when we last spoke in part one of this conversation, you were telling us that you chose to have an affair. You came to your wife, because you guys were already in a bad place in your marriage. You came to your wife and you said, you know, here's what's happening. I'm having an affair. You weren't repentant about it. You're just saying, this is the way it is. And I don't want to be in this relationship anymore. Yeah. My question to you is, were you planning on continuing the affair?
I don't think that I had a game plan at all. I think in my mind I had romanticized the idea of my life would be happier with someone else. I never thought through the consequences of that choice.
Had you and she discussed being together? Like, were you talking about trying to build a life together?
I think that was the fantasy. It was never going to be the reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Anytime you engage in a relationship that's outside of your marriage relationship, that relationship is never built on truth. It's always built on fantasy. It's always built on sin. And so there was never a reality of that going to come into fruition from my standpoint.
Isn't that the truth? That we all have this grass is greener on the other side thing that happens in our brain.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way it's going to be greener, really, is if you get over there and water it. That's the only way it's going to be greener. And once you get over there and water it, that means you also have to mow it. Like, life starts.
That's
You've
right.
got the regular
right.
stuff of life. Yep. And when you
That's
have right. the business of life happening, it doesn't quite look and feel as dreamy
exactly.
as it does in your head.
Yeah.
So you just knew, even if you didn't know for sure you were going to be in a relationship with this particular person, you just knew you didn't want to be in a relationship like this anymore.
Correct. And I think it wasn't until after the confession, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen. And Trisha really, through some wise counsel, kind of stepped up and said, you know what? You're not going to do whatever you want. Like, if you're going to choose this, there are going to be consequences to that. And part of that was, you know, she kicked me out. She packed up everything I owned, moved me in with a family that started the church with us. She took all the money out of the bank account.
Ooh, she went hard on you, didn't she?
Yeah, I mean, I think at that point it was...
You know, she's from the south side of Chicago. That's the way they do it.
But I think at that point it was, you know what? I have to protect myself and I have to protect the kids.
Right.
You know, if you're not going to think about us, then I'm going to think about us.
And what's happening with the church in all of this? So in the weeks that followed, right after this confession is made, then what happens with the church you're on staff with the church?
I mean, there was a precursor, definitely, where people knew we weren't well.
Mm-hmm.
It was just assumed we weren't well because of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a moment.
Crazy pastor's wife.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, Justin had that moment with our dear friend on the four-wheeler, I remember, like, 2 weeks before the affair started, going to an elder in between services and breaking down. And again, revealing truth. I don't know why we're not doing good, but we're not doing good. And saying, you know, Justin is not in a healthy place. And I just kind of got a
pat on the back.
It's all you.
You know, that's so interesting, because I think a lot of wives are in that predicament where the husband is seen, in your case, you know, on a platform. People see this charismatic mm-hmm. personality. They respect you because of your position. Mm-hmm. And in another woman's case, it might not be that she's a pastor's wife, but it could be that her husband's got the business suit on and he's in this
right.
corporate environment and he's successful and put together. She is at home with the kids and they're just thinking, well, you know, she'll be okay. She's fine. She's just whining and complaining.
Right. Yeah.
But you were reaching out for a little help, and people weren't taking you seriously.
Right. And now people were.
The
reality was hitting that this is really happening. But I think it's a testament to the drift. You know, when you drift in your marriage relationship, or even in your heart and with your relationship with God, it takes that jarring for you to look up and realize how far you've drifted,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
you want to pretend that you've got this good marriage. I wanted those things. It wasn't like I didn't want them, but I wasn't willing to change and do the hard work to fight for it,
mm-hmm.
because I did that one little thing. I did that one confession, and because it didn't turn out the way that I thought it should, or it wasn't reciprocated and I wasn't understood.
And you stopped trying.
And from the Christian standpoint, I mean, people pat me on the back and be like, you know, you get to step in. You know, biblically, you have all the reasons to leave this man, and we support you. But I would continue to be that bitter, broken woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so through that, it took me not only time to forgive Justin, but to forgive all those other people that I really...
That didn't help.
I wanted to hold captive, because if I could just blame them, then I wouldn't have to focus on myself.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Okay, this is very interesting. You just said that you could have chosen to leave. You could have chosen not to stay with your husband, because I was going to ask you, why did you not choose to, leave the marriage? But you said that you could have done that, but then you would have been out of the marriage, but still holding on to all of the stuff that would have still kept you bound and captive, the bitterness and the unforgiveness. So you're saying it was better for you to stay and work through it, that it did more for your soul to stay in the relationship, work through it, reconcile, because in doing that, you actually found the freedom. It's hard work, but you found the freedom from all of the stuff that would have kept you captive if you would have chosen to leave the relationship. So is that why you... In the heat of the moment, though, I'm sure you weren't thinking all that.
No.
That's now in hindsight that you're thinking that.
No, I mean, as a pastor's wife, I wish I could say, oh, I just turned to God and I fasted and prayed. But no, I went Southside Chicago on Jesus.
That's right.
I mean, it was an intense, but I what I love about God and what I love about our faith is that passage that we throw around all the time, that God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. That day... My sweet boys sitting at my feet, not understanding the tears pouring out of my face and just being so angry towards God. Like, this is beyond Justin.
Did you tell them? You told the boys? Or were they too young
at the time? We eventually told our oldest at the time was in fourth grade, and all of his kids at his public school were coming to our church except for two families. And so everybody
was invested.
You
know, he had invited all of his friends from his class. And, you know, the way that our church found out was through an email that was sent to 1,200 people.
Oh,
you know,
goodness
so
gracious.
There was a lot of decisions that had to be made.
Yes.
And
which I was fine, because again, I was in that truth journey. So I just wanted people to know the truth, because I didn't want their drama.
Why did you stay? What made you make the choice that I want to fight for this and we're going to figure this out?
This is going to sound so like a churched answer, but in that moment of like hot fury, I remember opening the Bible like a Sunday school type, just flip open. And I told God, I'm going to give you one chance. You speak to me. Right now, I'm done. I'm walking away from you. I'm walking away from, and I just love him, because he's like, bring it, girl, you know? And so I open up my Bible, and the passage I read was in Hebrews chapter 12. In verse 10, it starts out, which I think is pretty cruel, your earthly fathers. And I'm like, I already have father wounds. Now I have, my kids have father wounds. Like, why would you open me to a passage about dads? But it says, while your earthly fathers disciplined you the best that they knew how, God's discipline is always good, because it means we will lean into his holiness.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, what I loved about it, the next verse says, it's painful and no pain is enjoyable. Like God was saying, I know this, like I know this is going to be painful, but it says, you know, those who... step into this will reap a quiet harvest of right living. And then it goes on to say, you know, with my boys at my feet, you know, stand firm on your shaky legs and mark out a straight path. And then those who follow you, though they are weak and lame, will become strong.
So you're thinking about those boys. You're thinking about those who were coming after you and what a difference it would make in their lives if you chose to hang in there.
And it was the first time that I felt like what God was saying was stop controlling. Stop trying to control what you think Justin should be, what you think your life should be, what you think I want you to be, and just be a daughter in Christ. That's all I've asked you to be, and trust that if you lean into me, I'll give you what's next. Mm-hmm. And when I stopped controlling and really allowed God, I didn't kick him out because it was malice. I kicked him out because I was leaning into what my counselor was telling me. I was leaning into, I didn't take all of the money because I was punishing him, but he was making decisions that could have ruined us financially.
No, I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. I think you do have to move forward cautiously while this person is trying to decide what they want to do. I mean, because if they're choosing to leave, then you've got to put boundaries in place for yourself.
And it was
my
action. Right. It was my truth and grace, and then this was my action. And it was counterintuitive because even 9 years today, there is nothing more painful than packing up your husband's clothes. Mm-hmm. And I often say, you know, it was like he was dead, but worse, he was alive and he just didn't want to be with me. So I don't say it in a way that like you can wrap a bow on it. It was leaning in ways. But when Justin saw all of his clothes packed up in this little girl's room that he was staying in at our friend's house, you know, they had moved her into her sister's house, and he's in this pink-filled princess room with everything he owns stacked up, that broke him.
Of course. Yeah.
And it wasn't out of my manipulation, out of my control. It was me going, I'm trusting you, God. I think this is crazy town. Like, I don't understand it, but I'm going to lean into it. And it was that moment that brought Justin to his knees of the reality of his choices.
And how did the rebuilding start? What happened next?
Yeah, so we were separated for 2 months. We didn't speak for 10 days. And after I got moved into this with this family, I just felt like I don't want this. And so I started going to counseling. I went to counseling 4 days a week for the next 2 weeks. And I tell people that's how messed up I was. My counselor wanted to see me 4 days a week. And so
I think more people than not need counseling 4 days a week. I have a friend, she was just telling me that her daughter, her grown daughter and her husband, they're 2 years married now. And, you know, you have premarital counseling before you get married. Mm-hmm. And, you know, lots of people do, which is so wise. And then people get married and they stop counseling. They get into the marriage and then they're not talking to anybody about it all. And she said her kids, we were just talking about this yesterday, that they're having such a happy marriage. And I said, what do you attribute that to? And she said, you know, they go to counseling still once a week. They'll just have lunch with their counselor once every 2 weeks. And they've just done it for the whole 2 years they've been married, and they plan to continue. Yeah. And I think there's this stigma on counseling that needs to be removed, that oiling your car. You've got to keep getting the car oiled, or it's just not going to run smoothly.
Well, and my perspective on it was, I'm a pastor. I don't go to counseling. I do counseling. Mm-hmm. You know, and I viewed it as a sign of weakness. Yeah. But what I came to understand is that it's really a sign of strength and wisdom.
It is wisdom. There's wisdom in wise counsel, the
humility.
Proverbs said.
Humility.
Yes, lots of
humility.
We
still go to counseling.
And so,
God love Counselor Kenny. Yeah, we do.
So I started going to counseling, and on that 10th day of separation, Trish just called me, and she just said, I hear you're going to counseling. And I said, yes. And she said, well, I'm willing to go with you. And so we started going to counseling, and we went 4 days a week. The counseling service wasn't open on Fridays, so we skipped Fridays. And I went from being on staff at the church, speaking to 800 people a week. I started working at P.F. Chang's as a waiter. And so God just started really... You know, there's a passage in Lamentations chapter 3 that just talks about God taking the back of your head and smashing your teeth with gravel. And that was kind of the process that he was taking me through, kind of deconstructing all of the idols that I had set up in my life, of ministry and reputation and speaking ability, and even my marriage had become an idol.
Always an opinion on what love is, right? Everybody has an opinion on what love is. Hey, I'm Kelly Minter, and I want to invite you to join me as we dive into studying the letters of 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. That kind of love, he says we are to lay our lives down for others just like Jesus has laid down his life for us. We're to love that way, and that way takes love to an entirely different sphere, and that love is wholly impossible apart from Jesus Christ. Obedience always, always, always leads us in the direction of truth. John is saying, I'm proclaiming, I'm telling you all of this about Jesus so that you don't have to be alone anymore, and you can be welcomed in to the fellowship, and not just any fellowship, not just any team, but the one that is based on the shared life of Jesus. I was challenged by God's truths as I wrote this study, and I hope you'll be challenged as well. Because when we say obedience doesn't matter and God's ways don't matter, we're literally robbing people of their most significant expression of love for God, which is obedience.
I don't know that there are any more beautiful words in all of Scripture than the teacher is here and is asking for you. This is the book of love. And in this book, John actually tells us what love is.
You know, about 2 days after everything came out and I decided I want to fight for my marriage, I didn't know if it was a possibility because Trish had kind of defined some boundaries. I sent an email or I had someone contact her and say, I don't want to have any more contact ever again. And the only other contact that I had was with her husband a couple weeks later, just apologizing to him. And so we started the restoration process and we moved away from the town that we started the church in about 2 months later.
After 2 months, you're back living mm-hmm. together, moving away together.
We moved 30 okay. miles to the other side of Indianapolis. I started working downtown Indianapolis as a headhunter, executive recruiter. I placed commercial bankers in banks and did that for 4 years.
Did you have trouble trusting him after that?
Yeah.
It was probably a one-year process. You know, we went to counseling 4 times a week for 2 months, and then we went to counseling once a month for the next year. Mm-hmm. And our counselor said that most couples that experience infidelity don't make it past the first year.
Yeah.
And so on that one-year anniversary, we skipped church. We went to a Colts game. We just celebrated that we were at the starting line. Mm-hmm. You know, that this yeah. the one-year anniversary was kind of the starting line for us.
And I encourage wives all the time who deal with infidelity or even husbands that when someone like Justin... When you start to understand that the affair was a symptom of much greater issues, it loses its power over your heart and mind. And oftentimes people get themselves caught into a sin pattern because they're just looking for something, like Justin said, just to be ousted. Like they get so tired. And so when someone starts to live in truth, so for all of Justin's life, he has hidden being, you know, hurt as a child in pornography. He didn't know what life looked like living fully known. And so it was easy for him to earn trust with me because on those dark days where I would have a trigger or fear, you know, God's not given us a spirit of fear, but he's given us not only a spirit of power, but of sound mind. You know, in those days where I didn't have it together, he loved me by not taking it personal and not feeling like it wasn't because I wasn't forgiving him. But that was a moment for him to earn trust with me. Mm-hmm. And he didn't have anything to hide. And so it became this beautiful, painful balance. But even with the move, we were never going into ministry. I mean, I wasn't even going to church. We moved to our dream house. There was this white church across the street. And I'm like, I don't know. It's theology. I don't know if the pastor can preach. I don't care. But we'll just go because they have one service. It's very convenient. And
easy.
I'll let the kids go to church. And God, he just knew. And this little white church loved us for the next 2 years. They didn't care what our story was. They didn't care where we were going. They just loved us. And then about 2 years in, the senior pastor came to us and he said, I want to say this to you and I don't want you to be upset with me, but I don't feel like God's done with you. Mm. And I'm like, Pastor Carrie, I appreciate that word, but I'm done with ministry. Like, I'm not.
And I grew up in a tradition where if you failed morally, you don't get a second chance. You're done, you know. And so I got into the business world, and Trisha started serving in the student ministry, and we were perfectly content, mm-hmm. you know, never sharing our story, never mm-hmm. being back in ministry. It was just kind of what we felt like God had for us until he spoke that into us.
Because at the time, I felt like ministry had destroyed our marriage. Mm-hmm. It took mm-hmm. me 4 years to realize that it wasn't ministry that destroyed us. It was who we'd become in ministry. And so now getting a taste of who God called us to be from the very beginning and not having that identity started giving me the freedom to love the bride of Christ again. And so another local pastor of a large church asked us if we would come and share our story. And I was like, no. And he's like, well, will you pray about it? And I'm like, oh my gosh, he played the pastor card. I know that card. Like, I've been in ministry. And I told the pastor, I told Justin, I told God, I'm like, I'll do it one time. And then, you know, I'll just do it one time.
Now there's a book. Now you're sitting on this couch.
No.
Well, because there is so much freedom in the word of our testimony, you know, for other people. And I'm going to ask you a couple questions. I want to know, was it hard for either of your families, particularly your family, mom, dad, whatever, was it hard for them when you made the choice to reconcile? Because some people think, are you kidding? Y'all need to go your separate ways and move on. Why are you even going through all of this and allowing yourself to be back in this scenario again? Was it hard for them to accept your decision to reconcile? Or were they for it and supportive of it?
You know, I'll speak to Trisha's family first, because I don't think, other than Trisha forgiving me, I don't think I've ever been I've never been shown so much grace. Mm. You know, Trisha's mom, I remember I went to the house one night uninvited, trying to have a conversation with Trish just to convince her that I really wanted a second chance. And, her mom came out, and I was just like pounding on the hood of my car. And she just grabbed my hands and she said, "You're going to get a second chance. It's just not right now." Mm. You know, and so there was always hope. She always had hope.
Beautiful.
For us, you know. Yeah. And then my brother-in-law came into town and, you know, just came to the house I was staying. And I was nervous. I didn't know if he was going to punch me or, you know, cuss me out or what he was going to do. And he just wrapped his arms around me and just gave me a hug. And, and so those were just two defining moments that even if our marriage didn't make it, I knew that God had dispensed his grace into their hearts to extend to me in a very tender moment.
His family was the same for me in the opposite way, because all of his siblings had experienced divorce. One married a divorced woman, the other two had been previously divorced. So he just thought he was going to be welcomed, like supportive. And when he wasn't, and they came after him and said, you know, "What are you leaving? What are you thinking?
You're ruining a legacy. You're ruining your kids' lives." Like, they were just really went after me and protected Trish, you know. And so they were not enabling of my behavior and my choices at all.
Mm. We're very blessed.
So I asked this question very hesitantly. I'm stepping carefully with this question, but I'm asking it for a woman that's sitting out there watching this, or a man that's sitting out there and watching. And they're in this scenario. They're in the heat of it right now. Mm-hmm. If this were to happen again — it's not going to happen again — if it were to happen again, would you take this journey again?
Mm.
I'm asking that because there is a woman that is thinking, or a man that is thinking, this has already happened once.
Right, right.
And we're on the second time. Do I stay this time?
Right. I think there's a difference between forgiveness is free. Jesus provides that forgiveness, but trust is earned. And so if I were to get into a car intoxicated and hit another car and took the life of somebody, and that family could forgive me, they could show me grace, they can show me forgiveness, but the consequences, I have to face them, and I can't bring that person, that loved one, back. There's a death there. And sometimes our choices lead to death. Sin talks about in the Bible how sin leads to death, and sometimes it's the death of a relationship that God isn't calling us to be stepped on or used. That's why this is so hard. That's why we call the book Beyond Ordinary, because extraordinary life isn't about living perfectly. It's about choosing to go beyond. Mm-hmm. And that's hard. And so if someone's cheated on you or manipulated you, and maybe it's not even in a marriage like infidelity, but they have brought you into financial ruin, or there's another addiction that, you know, alcoholism or drug. I mean, you talk to couples that are in that type of addiction, it's painful to watch, because to love somebody so much, but they're not willing to change. Mm-hmm. I tell couples all the time, I could have loved God, fasted, prayed, been perfect, super Christian. God would still have me, but Justin had to choose that.
Yeah.
And had he not chose, we would be divorced. And it's not because I'm a lesser of a person or I lose my identity in Christ, but our choices have consequences.
Right.
Not unhealed behavior becomes repeated behavior. And so every time someone repeats infidelity, it's because they didn't really get to the root of what caused it in the first place. Mm-hmm. They either swept it under the rug, they said, you know, they apologized it away. You know, there was some type of behavior that took place that they wanted to escape the pain of quickly. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, you know, I think we repeat sin in our life because the pain of changing is greater than the pain of staying the same.
Yeah.
And so we try to experience this little incremental change rather than allowing God to transform us.
Well, let me just tell you, we're grateful that you guys took the journey together. And even when you just mentioned earlier that your oldest son is getting ready to graduate from high school, I mean, this phase in his life could have looked so differently and felt so differently for him had you all not made the decisions and the choices that you did. And so now you've got these boys that are going to have an entirely different viewpoint of what marriage and family and being a husband and father and walking the hard road and making mistakes and apologizing and moving on and doing the hard work, like you mentioned, doing the hard work to be conformed into the image of Christ, basically. Mm-hmm. They're going to have an entirely different view of that because of the hard choices you guys
made. The front row seat that they got to grace, too.
Yeah.
You know, to see grace lived out in their life through the power of forgiveness is a huge gift.
That's good. So we've got truth plus grace plus action. That's the formula that I'm walking away with. I love that so much. That is what brings healing, not only into your marriage relationship, but in all your relationships. That formula can really change your life. Truth plus grace plus action. I'm taking that home, and I hope you will too. You also need to take home a copy of this, Beyond Ordinary, because it really will give you lots of interesting information, not only about their lives, but information that really can be instrumental in your own experiences as well. Remember, this is part two of a conversation that we had a part one to, so you're going to need to watch it every Tuesday and Thursday this month. Part one is always on Tuesday. Part two is on Thursday. You can watch at noon or 6 p.m. or 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. And I'll be right here with an opportunity to introduce you to these wonderful people and give you an opportunity to hear their entire story. So we're so grateful to y'all for being here and for sitting on this stuff. Will you guys help me to thank them for being here?